translation. Covered by the mode of ignorance in material nature, the living entity is sometimes a male, sometimes a female, sometimes a eunuch, sometimes a human being, sometimes a demigod, sometimes a bird, an animal, and so on. In this way, he is wandering within the material world. His acceptance of different types of bodies is brought about by his activities under the influence of the modes of nature. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Actually, the living entity is part and parcel of the Lord. Therefore, he is spiritual in quality. The living entity is never material, and his material conception is simply a mistake due to forgetfulness. He is as brilliant as the Supreme Personality of God. Both the sun and the sunshine are very bright. The Lord is like the full shining sun, and the living entities are like the small particles of that sun, which constitute the all-pervasive sunshine. When these small particles are covered by the cloud of Maya, they lose their shining capacity. When the cloud of Maya is gone, the particles again become brilliant and shining. As soon as the living entity is covered by the ignorance of Maya or darkness, he cannot understand his relationship with the Supreme God. Somehow or other, if he comes before the Lord, he can see himself as shining as the Supreme Lord, although he is not as extensive as the Lord. Because the living entity desires to imitate the Supreme Lord, he is covered by Maya. We cannot imitate the Lord, nor can we become the Supreme Enjoyer. This is not possible. And when we think it is, we become conditioned by Maya. Thus the encagement of the living entity under the clutches of Maya is brought about by forgetfulness of his relationship with the Supreme Lord. So that's the first paragraph. There's another couple of paragraphs, but I'll go over this first. Kachit pumam kachit chastri ka prachin nobayam andati devo manusyas tiryagva yata karma gunam babaha. Covered by the mode of ignorance in material nature, the living entity is sometimes a male, sometimes a female, sometimes a eunuch, sometimes a human being, sometimes a demigod, sometimes a bird or animal, and so on. In this way, he is wandering within the material world. His acceptance of different types of bodies is brought about by his activities under the influence of the modes of nature. So that's the verse again. So here in this verse, we're getting very similar things as in many verses, and sometimes people criticize Srila Prabhupada as preaching, you know, that you're not that body. He doesn't seem to get off of the platform, you're not that body. He doesn't go to the higher realms of spiritual knowledge that we're gopis and our relationships with Krishna. So why? It's for several reasons. One is because we still think we're the body. That's probably the most important thing. You know, these people who want to just go to the higher levels, you can't jump over this little bit of an impediment thinking of this body. So here, the verse tells how we're sometimes male, sometimes female. We're not these bodies. We're eternal. We're spirit souls. The bodies are temporary. And we have different types of bodies according to our karma. According to the way we behave in this life, that determines what type of body we will get in our next life, material or spiritual. Of course, once you go to get a spiritual body, then that's the end of this change of bodies. So the living entity is part and parcel of God. Therefore, he's spiritual. We're all pure spiritual, but we're called marginal. The marginal is we can become covered. God is so great, he cannot become covered, but the little fragmental parts and parcels, or the sparks in the fire, they can go out. The fire is going nice, but a spark lands somewhere and it can go out. or the sun rays may be covered by some cloud. The sun is never covered. The cloud can only cover just a portion of the earth. But the sun is always blazing. So Krishna is never covered. Krishna is never an illusion, but the living entities have this potency or lack of potency so that they are able to fall into Maya. It's never material. But his material conception is simply a mistake due to forgetfulness. Forget. I mean, I know I forget a lot of things. And that's a big thing, to forget who we are. And forget, and we think that we're something we're not. It's actually insane. Prabhupada, people were criticizing us for being crazy, and he wrote a little pamphlet, Who is Crazy? You know, these people who think that just because the majority, if you're in an insane asylum and the majority are crazy, they all may think a certain way. They're all an illusion. So the majority, it doesn't matter what the majority thinks, because they're an illusion. What matters is what the acharyas think, what Srila Prabhupada thinks. So he is as brilliant as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So just like the sun and the sun rays, the shining sun and the living entities, are like the small particles of the sun. Okay, and then they can be covered by Maya. They lose their shining capacity. So when the cloud of Maya is gone, the particles again become brilliant and shining. I mean, I could say what I can see in devotees. Sometimes they come and they're totally in ignorance, and it's like they're just totally covered over. And after a while of chanting Hare Krishna, following the program, doing service, they actually, their natural luster or their spirit manifests, and you can actually see that they're so much brighter. Prabhupada says the devotees are bright-faced. They're bright-faced because the spirit soul is showing. You know, we have these bodies. These bodies are just, you know, lump of ignorance. They're not, anyway, but when we use this body enthusiastically in serving Krishna, then these bodies begin to exhibit the soul within the body. And one seems, the devotees are attractive. When they're fired up, they're the most attractive. You go on Harinam, and everyone, if they're chanting and dancing, not like, you know, just doing it because it's a job, I got to do it, but they actually get into it, they look bright-faced, they look brilliant, and it's attractive to people because everyone else is dull. I mean, I was attracted to the Harinam. I wasn't into the chanting at all. I was just attracted to devotees. They looked like they were really happy. I like happy people. I don't know why.
You notice that older devotees don't really look old.
Well, I don't know. When I look in the mirror, I see an old man.
From the side, yes. When you look at the devotees, you don't feel their age.
Yeah.
Like, I remember that also. Like, when you're not a devotee, when you look at the devotees, they all look young, even if they're old.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's nice.
So do you, Kiari.
Yeah. Well, I was even considered like the old man when I was on Radha Damodar, because I was like older than most of the others. And I was younger. But and one person on Sankirtan, two people he met, this little black guy, his name was Vijendra Vigraha. He was like 22 years old or something, but he was really small. And he had this inferiority complex. And because we joke with him. So one time somebody was looking for him. It was this little kid, he's a black boy, you know, and he was embarrassed. And then they also, some other people also mentioned about me, that there was this old man. So, not everybody sees that way. Anyway, so we both had our, like, the way the devotees looked. I didn't really care if the devotees thought that I looked old or not. But he really cared, and they thought he looked like a little kid. Okay. So in this, when the cloud of Maya is gone, the particles again become brilliant and shining. As soon as the living entity is covered by the ignorance of Maya or darkness, he cannot understand his relationship with the Supreme God. Somehow or other, if he comes before the Lord, he can see himself as shining as the Supreme Lord, although he is not as extensive as the Lord. He's still the same quality, not the same quantity. But that's the fact with the devotees, is they shine. Even Prabhupada said they are bright-faced. They were hippies, and now they're happies, he said. Because the hippies may think they're happy, but they're not happy. But devotees are happy. You could be happy. You should be happy. I remember when I was a new devotee, I was very austere. And I previously was an impersonalist. I really thought I was God, but when I learned from the devotees, I accepted it because I knew that, you know, when I heard the truth, I can understand it was the truth. But at the same time, the impersonalists are just very austere, and there's no question of enjoying. And I seemed to carry that on to my devotee life. I thought enjoying was Maya. Enjoying was illusion. So when it came for prasadam, in those days there were very little prasadam. We would actually sit on the floor. They'd give us about 6 chickpeas, a slice or two of orange, and a little bit halva. And I have no idea what else. We got some ginger with the chickpeas. It was like not really a meal. It may have been something else. It must have been some farina or oatmeal, I don't know. I don't remember anything else. But I remember whenever I'd get my plate, I'd take another plate and I'd take some off just to be more austere. And then every Ekadasi, I didn't eat anything at all. I drank only water. Now I'm kind of getting back a little bit, but I drink juice. You know. I remember like enjoying, you can't enjoy. So I talked to this one devotee named Chidi Raj. And I don't remember how I explained to him or what I said to get him to realize my situation is I don't enjoy. I just want to, you know, let me suffer and make advancement. You know, I mean, it was not really Krishna consciousness. And he told me, he said, the reason I joined this movement, Srila Prabhupada said, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. That's why I joined this movement, you know. And then I realized it's okay to be happy, you know, chanting Hare Krishna. So then I may have gone a little bit too far in the happiness direction, you know, trying to enjoy. But we should enjoy. We should be happy. We're naturally happy. And if you're really in Krishna consciousness, you are happy because that natural happiness is being exhibited. And even though you're working like anything, physically, mentally, you're struggling, you're happy. It's amazing how when Prabhupada was here, devotees hardly slept, worked so very, very hard. You know, the commies did not work nearly as hard as the devotees. And the devotees were really happy. And they didn't have anything. They didn't have, no one had a bed, everyone slept on the floor. No one, and we didn't have much prasadam, and we were happy. Lunch, we had a meal, you know, sabji, rice, maybe chapatis too, I think. Not many chapatis, but at least one or two. And in the evening, just some milk and cookies, that was it. And then go to bed, and the next day, get up, and everything starts again. So you can, the more you, you know, you use this body in Krishna's service. Prabhupada completely used this body. Even when he was very sick, when he got some strength, he just started preaching and getting more strength and preaching really heavy and preaching. And then finally, his strength was gone. He just fell back down, you know, in bed. So we should be utilizing our body. And then this natural, happy, bright, state of the soul will manifest through this body. So under the influence of Maya, the living entity becomes exactly like a person haunted by a ghost. Such a person speaks all kinds of nonsense. Prabhupada talked about this. People who walk down the street talking to themselves are ghostly haunted. So here he's saying a ghost. People who are ghostly haunted just speak nonsense. And now he's saying here, anybody in Maya is always just speaking nonsense. So it's like they're haunted by a ghost. You know, Prabhupada gives this example for people who don't know ghosts, people who don't know anything. They may not understand it, but for Prabhupada, it makes perfect sense. People who are haunted by ghosts speak nonsense. Such a person speaks all kinds of nonsense. When the living entity is covered by the influence of Maya, he becomes so-called scientist, philosopher, politician, or socialist, and at every moment presents different plans for the benefit of human society. All these plans are ultimately failures because they are illusory. In this way, the living entity forgets his position as an eternal servant of the Lord. He instead becomes a servant of Maya. In any case, he remains a servant. Okay, so I'm going to go back here. So what does he do now? This is the living entity. He's like haunted by a ghost. He becomes a scientist, philosopher, politician, etc. And he tries to figure out ways to make this life nice and comfortable and happy. But he completely fails because it can't be happy unless you're actually on that spiritual platform, unless you're realizing who you really are, unless you have that the manifestation of the soul's quality coming through this body. And there's no material way of doing that. There's only a spiritual way of doing that. And that's basically surrendering to Krishna, surrendering to his representative. And who is his representative? In ISKCON, who is the representative of Krishna? Anybody know?
Srila Prabhupada and everyone who follows Srila Prabhupada.
Right, right, exactly. And then following Srila Prabhupada, this could be a little tricky. There's different kind of gurus. You know, some gurus... Well, let's just give them the benefit of the doubt that all gurus follow Srila Prabhupada, but some follow him better than others. Now, how do you distinguish between gurus? How can they see one is better than another? I see that those gurus who are concerned with their disciples' spiritual progress, those are the best gurus. And then there are other gurus who are representing Prabhupada. They're concerned with the spiritual progress, but they're more concerned with their own projects. I have this temple here, and I need people for this temple, so I take people from Prabhupada's ISKCON and bring them to my temple. That's not as advanced. Prabhupada says, think of ISKCON first and your temple second. So if you're thinking of the whole of ISKCON, now a guru, he has such influence over his disciples, you know, providing the disciples, you know, are surrendered. I mean, because you had disciples of Prabhupada who were not, you know, just did what they wanted to do. But even this is a Prabhupada, but somehow they got initiated. But let's just assume the disciples are genuine. They're going to do whatever their guru says. So this guru who is representing Prabhupada, but also has his own project, and takes the person, he's doing very nicely spiritually where he is, but takes them from there and brings them to his own project. To me, that's not as and that guru is not as advanced as the guru who is not as concerned with his own project as he is with the spiritual life of the disciple and with the whole movement of ISKCON. So even accepting a guru, one should see a little bit beyond how do they manage things.
Aren't you supposed to watch them for like 3 years or something?
Oh, I don't think you have to wait that long. But you should, I think it should be in ISKCON, I'm not sure if it's a year or 6 months, where it's only you and Prabhupada. Prabhupada's your guru. And you shouldn't even think about another guru. And then after that, then you can think about who you want to accept diksha from. And that's another thing, diksha and shiksha. In ISKCON, diksha is the only thing that is really important. Your shiksha guru is like pretty insignificant, which is not according to scripture, not according to Siddhanta, not according to past history. You know, we look at Lord Chaitanya, we had diksha gurus, but their main gurus were shiksha gurus. It is, in fact. And our line of disciplic succession is more shiksha gurus than diksha gurus. So, this is another little fallacy. Actually, Narendra Swami wrote a really nice paper. He didn't write it all by himself, but he was, I think, one of the main ones about the lines of...
Harmonizing the lines of authority in his quote.
Say, what's
harmonizing?
Harmonizing the lines of authority, yeah. That's really good. And if we did that in ISKCON today, I think this movement would spread a lot faster than it is. I think when people just concern with their own personal projects more than... And sometimes it hurts the disciples to work for them. In any case, how do we get out of Maya? We surrender to Prabhupada. You can surrender to Prabhupada by surrendering to the devotees who are surrendered to Prabhupada. Prabhupada said if if someone is, I think I read it here last time, but if you're envious of another devotee, you shouldn't be envious. Instead, if the other devotee is doing really good spirit, you should see him as almost equal to your guru. So Prabhupada is saying this about his disciples, that we should see some of these disciples as almost equal to him. While he was here, he's saying. So that's very difficult because we have problems. You know, we're having problems with this person who's doing nicely and I get envious. We talked about envy in I don't have too much time, but in Hartford, about how you're envious of someone who is relatively equal. You're not envious of people who are so much, they have so much, there's no comparison. We're not really envious of them. Although Krishna, we're envious of him, even though he's got everything. So I guess I have to read. I want to at least finish the purport. He becomes a so-called scientist, philosopher. Okay, so he's got all these positions, these titles, but what is he? He can't help anyone because he doesn't know who he is. It's so bad. You know, how are you going to help anyone? You become so educated, but you still don't know who you are. What is the value of it? It's useless. You don't know who you are. You know, they seem so intelligent, Jasumati Nandana asked Srila Prabhupada, is there two kinds of intelligence, material intelligence and spiritual intelligence? And Srila Prabhupada said, no. So intelligence is intelligence and the devotees are the most intelligent. Because he was pointing out devotees don't seem so intelligent a lot of the time, materially, and the karmi seem very intelligent. But the devotees are the most intelligent. Why are they the most intelligent? They understand I'm not this body, so why should I work like anything? These other people are working like anything, doing everything so great. They've gotten so far, but they don't know who they are. So what is the value of it? They're doing it all wrong. If you don't know who you are, you're doing it for something else. Of course, if they understand who they are, then they could do a lot. Anyway, all these plans are ultimately failures because they are illusory. In this way, the living entity forgets his position as an eternal servant of the Lord. He instead becomes a servant of Maya. In any case, he remains a servant. Everyone has to serve. Nobody cannot be a servant. Everyone in this material world serves. You can try to serve as little as possible, but you still have to serve. So if you got to serve, And you want to be happy too. Everyone wants to be happy. Why not serve that person who can make you the happiest? So that's what we're trying. It is his misfortune that by forgetting his real contact with the Supreme Lord, he becomes a servant of Maya. As servant of Maya, he sometimes becomes a king, sometimes an ordinary citizen, sometimes a brahmana, a shudra, and so on. Sometimes he is a happy man, sometimes a prosperous man, sometimes a small insect. Sometimes he is in heaven and sometimes in hell. Sometimes he is a demigod and sometimes he is a demon. Sometimes he is a servant and sometimes he is a master. In this way, the living entity wanders all over the universe. Only when he comes in contact with the bona fide spiritual master can he understand his real constitutional position. And as we said earlier, that bona fide spiritual master in ISKCON is that person who follows Srila Prabhupada most closely. He is the most bona fide. And was concerned with the disciples' spiritual progress and not their own projects. I mean, he's concerned with his own projects, but he doesn't try to use his disciples to help him with his projects. He uses his disciples just to see that they're making spiritual advancement. This is why I think that gurus really should not have any projects. They shouldn't be in charge. They shouldn't be GBCs. They shouldn't be temple presidents. They should just go and preach. And that way they're not attached to anything. So they're not going to take somebody from this temple to help them with their project. They don't have any projects.
Even GBC, you think gurus should not be?
I don't think they should, because then they have their zone. They're thinking more of their zone.
I think now it's like this. I think now almost all GBCs are the gurus. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Now there are different zones. They post every year whose zone is where.
I don't understand.
Every year they post, like GBC, they post which guru like is responsible for which zone.
No, it's not which gurus. No, it's which GBC member is
responsible
for each zone. Most of the GBC members are gurus, but they may not be a guru and they may still have a zone. That's what it should be. It should be people who are managers in this kind. There's a difference. The preacher is the highest, but he shouldn't manage anything. The person who manages is not as high as the preacher who knows, you know, I mean, of course he could be, not saying he isn't, but that's the way it should be, as far as I can see. Because otherwise, it's like, what do they call it in law? It's a conflict of interest. It's a conflict of interest. I have my project and then I have my disciple. I should just be concerned, let them do nicely, wherever they are. But because I have my project, it's a conflict of interest, so I take my disciples from my project. And that's wrong. So if they have no project and they just preach and they make disciples, then wherever their disciples are, they're fine with that. And then if a disciple is not doing good where they are, then they can take that disciple and discuss with them, where would you like to go? You know, what do you think would be better? You're not doing good, this person, you don't get along, whatever it may be. But then he's not just taking them for even his project. He's taking them for wherever they're going to do best. Then his only interest is that my disciple is making spiritual advancement. That's all.
I was thinking also that all temples in ISKCON, they belong to ISKCON. Yes.
Right.
But at the same time, it can be somebody's project.
Yeah, like this temple is my project.
Because who is temple president?
Yeah, I put in this position, so now I care about this temple more than I do New Jersey temple. But I'm not a guru. I mean, even if I was a guru, I would be one of the low class, second class gurus who would think about my project. Probably, maybe not more than the devotee's advancement, but I would try to use that devotee for my project. I'm not that advanced, but I see there are devotees who are that advanced. And they don't take people away from their projects. As long as they're doing nice spiritually, they let them stay there. know, but sometimes they might if the person is not doing very well, and then even then, they don't necessarily take them for their project. They may just put them somewhere else. Anyway, I really think devotees, before getting initiated, should consider this as one of the qualities of who I should get initiated by. I don't know all the gurus, so I don't know how they behave. The few that I know some that are definitely really good and do this properly, and then others who don't, and I don't care for those gurus too much. Only when he comes in contact with the bona fide spiritual master can he understand his real constitutional position. He then becomes disgusted with material existence. This is nice. He gets disgusted with material existence. I see people, Indian people who, you know, devotees, and they just can't stand the job. They can't stand so many things, but they have to do it. That's good. You should be disgusted with it. It's impetus for spiritual life. He then becomes disgusted with material existence. At that time, in full Krishna consciousness, he regrets his past experiences in material existence. He regrets, why I wasted so much time with all this nonsense. This regret is very beneficial because it purifies the living entity of material conditional life. Prabhupada also said the fire of ordeal, the fire of ordeal. You burn off so much. So this regretting your past sins is purifying. Why was this nonsense? So we shouldn't regret where we just, oh man, I'm so useless. We don't do anything. No. I regret doing that. Now I'm going to start doing things right. That's the way we should be. We don't get fanatical. Like people with low self-esteem. Low self-esteem, basically all they're doing is thinking of themselves. They're not thinking of Prabhupada. They're not thinking of Krishna. I really feel so bad. I'm just no good. I'm useless. Okay. Snap out of it. You know, start serving Krishna. Because I mentioned this before. I don't have much time, so let me just read. He then prays to the Lord to engage in his service. And at that time, Krishna grants liberation from the clutches of Maya. Lord Krishna explains this in Bhagavad Gita 7:14. Daivihi esha gunamayi mama maya dharatyaya. This divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. So this divine energy, first of all, the three modes of material nature, Krishna is saying is divine. It's divine because it's coming from Krishna. How do you get out of these modes of nature? This is like we've been trying and we don't seem to do so well at it. By surrendering to Krishna. And the way to surrender to Krishna is to surrender to his representative. So when we surrender to Krishna's representative, genuine representative, we're surrendering to Krishna, and in that way we can become free from the influence of the three modes of material nature. Only by the grace of Krishna can one get out of the clutches of Maya. It is not possible to get out by material speculation or other activities. When the living entity understands his real position by the grace of Krishna, he keeps himself always fit in Krishna consciousness and acts accordingly. Always fit in Krishna consciousness. It's just like if I always physically, I want to be always fit. I do exercises. I find out which is the best exercises. I can lift weights. I can do chin-ups, push-ups, calisthenics. Anybody know the word calisthenics? You must know it. You know calisthenics too, right? I don't think they use that word too much anymore, calisthenics. But the older generation, when we went to school, we learned calisthenics, you know, different exercises, jumping jacks and going, different things. I mean, whatever the exercise is, you can figure out what's best to keep your body fit. And you keep your body fit by doing these exercises. So similarly, spiritually, you have to do certain things and avoid certain things, even in to keep your body fit, you might not eat certain things, or you might eat certain things. You know, sometimes people body lifting weights, they take extra protein powder, you know, so they do certain kind of diet, and they also do certain kind of exercise. So similarly, we have to do the same. We have to have a certain diet we have to take, we have to do certain things that are favorable for Krishna consciousness, using this body in Krishna service. Then we will be fit. He keeps himself always fit in Krishna consciousness. That means he does everything he's supposed to do so that he stays fit, stays healthy in Krishna consciousness, and acts accordingly. Thus he gradually becomes completely free from the clutches of Maya. When he is strong in Krishna consciousness, Maya cannot touch him. Interesting. So even when Prabhupada was here, there was advanced devotees, or so-called advanced devotees. And they fell down, and Prabhupada, they asked Prabhupada, how is it possible that these advanced devotees fall down? And Prabhupada says, advanced devotees don't fall down. So here the same thing is that when one is completely free from the clutches of Maya, he cannot be touched by Maya. When he is strong in Krishna consciousness, Maya cannot touch him. So similarly, if Maya is touching us, it means we're not really strong in Krishna consciousness. And I'd have to say, I think that goes for all of us, that we're still not strong in Krishna consciousness. We're gaining a little strength, but we're still weak. So in this way, what do we have to do? We have to try to remember, I got to be fit, I got to do whatever it takes. In this way, in the association of Krishna conscious devotees, the living entity can get free from the contamination of material existence. Interesting, in association with Krishna conscious devotees, Prabhupada puts that in, because sometimes life may seem a lot easier without association of Krishna conscious devotees. Sometimes we may get, fried out from certain devotees. But we have to stay in association of Krishna conscious devotees in order for us to get free from material contamination. In this connection, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, Tate Krishna Bhaje Kare Gurura Sevana Maya Jale Chute Paya Krishnira Charana. In the Krishna conscious state, the living entity engages in devotional service under the direction of the spiritual master. In this way, he gets out of the clutches of Maya and takes shelter under the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 22:25. In this way, he gets out of the clutches of Maya and takes shelter under the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. He engages in devotional service under the direction of the spiritual master. Okay, I'll read the verse one last time. Covered by the mode of ignorance and material nature, the living entity is sometimes a male, sometimes a female, sometimes a eunuch, sometimes a human being, sometimes a demigod, sometimes a bird, an animal, and so on. In this way, he's wandering within the material world. His acceptance of different types of bodies is brought about by his activities under the influence of the modes of nature. Any questions? First questions. Yes?
You mentioned about being disgusted.
About what?
How devotees, they become disgusted with the material activities. And like you said, it is good. At the same time, I remember the verse about a yogi, that one who is too much disgusted with the material world, like, or too much after sense gratification, is not qualified to be a yogi. What is too much disgust?
Well, I think too much is what I was saying.
And what is properly?
I think too much is what I was saying earlier about like low self-esteem. I'm so disgusted, I can't take it, I don't like it, I don't want to do it. It's just, and they're just thinking about themselves. And and you don't do anything. So I think when you're too much in that mode of disgust, you don't serve Krishna. In other words, you should be just disgusted enough where I don't want it anymore, I don't want to have anything to do with it, I just want to do whatever it takes for me to not have to do that again. Then that's the right amount of disgust. Any other questions? Any comments?
Prabhupada mentions in regards to the Brahma-Bhuta platform, he says, when one no longer feels pains and pleasures, now does that Yeah, because there used to be, you know, people used to say, you know, don't be sticking people with pins and, you know.
To see if they can feel pain and pleasure.
Yeah.
Okay, my understanding is they feel pains and pleasure, but it doesn't, they're like callous to it. It's like...
Tolerated.
They tolerate it. That doesn't affect them at all.
Right.
You know, and they don't work in any way to try to get the pleasure and to get relief of the pain. They just concerned with Krishna. It's really being Krishna conscious. When you're Krishna conscious, you're not like even if you're conscious.
It's neutral and it's cold, it's hot, whatever.
Yeah, but you I mean you certainly can notice. It's not like they have their hand
right.
in the fire for 5 minutes and
right.
oh my God, my hand is all gone. You know, they know, but. You don't, we have a little experience of this in our lives, in our material lives. When you're absorbed in something, you don't feel pain.
You just don't notice.
Right. I think pretty much everyone has experienced working at something and getting cut and, you know, not noticing at all you're even cut until you see the blood and then you figure out where the blood is coming from. You don't feel it. So your consciousness is absorbed. So if your consciousness is absorbed in Krishna, you're not going to even feel these pains and pleasures of the body very minutely. You know, but you will feel enough. Prabhupada was cold. He didn't like the cold. You know, so, you know, you want to... It's not that he didn't feel cold, but... He, what did he do? He put on a coat. He put on a sweater. He did something about it. It's not like, well, I'm just going to go out with nothing like one devotee. Went out with a t-shirt on a walk with Prabhupada in the cold parts, whatever. Prabhupada said something like the meat eaters, they cannot feel the cold as much. If you eat meat, it's easier to tolerate the cold. Maybe that's why, like in in the North Pole or Alaska, when you got these people, there's nothing else but you got to eat meat and fish. Nothing else to eat probably helps them from feeling the cold to some extent. But anyway, I'm not on that platform. I'm speculating, but it's philosophical speculation. I'm trying to figure out how. From my own experience, and from your own experience, when you're absorbed in something and you do get hurt, you don't always notice it till later somehow. So
right, if you're really absorbed in Krishna, then that's where your
consciousness is on that. It's
yeah.
not on the body. It's something
right.
happening to the body. You don't feel it. And we certainly know that, the Haridas Thakur. Now, was he feeling all this pain? Being whipped, he's absorbed in Krishna. It's not this body. He's totally convinced in every way he's not this body. It's not artificial. I know I'm not this body. I'm not this body, but when somebody hits me, I feel it because I don't know so much I'm not this body. But not only do they know they're not this body, they know who they are. I'm a cowherd boy. I'm a gopi. I'm whatever my relationship is with Krishna, I know what that is. So I'm absorbed in that. I think Lord Chaitanya, when he was absorbed in being with Krishna, things were happening to his body. He didn't feel any of it. His face is being scraped on the side of a wall. He didn't feel it. He was just thinking of Krishna. So, I'm just using Lord Chaitanya. He's not an ordinary soul, jiva soul. Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.